Welcome to another edition of 100% Canucks. Landon Ferraro is there. I'm John Shannon. Well, Landon, the Canucks put a team on the ice in Seattle last night. What did you make of what the team did and who impressed you?
I think they did a pretty good job. I mean, it's always interesting watching, especially that first preseason game where, and it's on the road. You know, you generally send all your young guys and guys you want to make sure they get at least a game, and then kind of your less experienced veterans to fill out the parameters that you need in a preseason game. And Seattle had a pretty good lineup in going against them. So I think the Canucks did a pretty good job. The young kids held their own. I think Adam Foote brought it up with his first answer of, you know, Tolopilo really kind of held us in early and he played really well. And I think that's important for him. You know, Artur Shelovs was here last year and Tolopilo got stuck behind him in the American League, especially on that long run. He got into one game in the playoffs, but Shelovs, well, he was the MVP for a reason. And so for him to come into camp and have a good showing in his first preseason game is great for him. It was interesting to see Drew O'Connor going out first with Teddy Bluger on the PK, getting a chance. And that makes a lot of sense. He's a big guy. He's got a big frame, but he skates extremely well. So that's an opportunity. But, you know, it's just at a lot of points, it looked like a first preseason game for both sides. There's a reason they play a couple of these before the season gets going.
And Victor Mancini made a difference.
He really did. And, it's one of those where you're not expecting him to take over a game or do anything like that. It's just like the little bit of building from last year. He had really good showings when he was with the Canucks last season. And he comes into camp and his skating looks really good again. And how Adam Foote wants this team to play. The D getting more involved in the offensive side, joining the rush, taking those opportunities when they're there. Well, that's kind of how Victor Mancini's game is built. Foote did bring up that, you know, as the game went along, especially after his goal, which was a beautiful goal coming off the flank and beating the Cord low glove. But, you know, he got his excitement going a little bit and, you know, he's like, you know, we need to calm him down in the neutral zone a little bit, but no, I think that's a young guy trying to really show that he wants to be on this team. He can do more. He's trying to showcase as much as he can. And it's the old phrase, right? Like sometimes less is more. And I think that's a conversation they would have had. And I expect him to do that next game, because again, it was a really good showing for him.
Well, the interesting point for me is you're never quite sure how many games you're going to get in the preseason to impress. Now, I think Mancini's different because you don't go and trade for somebody of his ilk as part of the JT Miller trade without thinking you have invested a great deal in him. You know, I've been a broken record since the trade. I think Mancini in the end might become the linchpin to the trade for the Canucks. He's that good a player. Some people in Vancouver may laugh at me, but my friends that work in New York were not happy to see Victor Mancini leave in any type of trade, albeit that JT Miller was the most important person in the trade. The other one for me is, you know, last night was the first night this coaching staff actually worked a game together. And, you know, that's a style of chemistry. That's a chemistry issue that is also going to take time. You know, Adam Foote back as a head coach for the first time since his time in Kelowna. This is going to be a work in progress as well. And I fully expect it will work. I think Scott Young and Kevin Dean are really smart coaches and know their roles. But to me, that's an interesting part of what preseason will be for this hockey club. Okay. Today's guest. Well, when you started your pro career in Grand Rapids, you got to play with this guy. So this is we're transcending generations as Brad May, the former Canuck, joins us to talk about life in the game, what it was like to play with Landon Ferraro. Tell me, when you went into that dressing room in Grand Rapids and you saw Brad May show up, what'd you think?
I was thinking, this is awesome, right? Like, I moved to Vancouver after my dad retired in 02, and he was on the team here, and he was doing what he's known for. And we could play with the puck. He had hands, but he also used those hands for something else as well. And as a young kid, that's always a fun part of the game, and he brought so much energy. But to walk in and see that stature standing in front of you, and not only that, but the type of person, I mean, you know him extremely well. Mm-hmm. He made me feel like I'd been a part of that group right from the go. And the fact that we had 20 years between our ages didn't matter. Like, I was part of the team instantly. And that's part of the beauty of Brad May, is whether you meet him once or 100 times, he's going to remember, and he's going to know and make you feel like you're just as part of everything that's going on. And it was a great experience.
By the way, he may be 20 years older. I'm not sure he's 20 years maturer than you,
Lennon. I don't think we have much competition there. Oh, his energy is through the roof. It's so fun to be around.
And it has not changed one iota from the time Brad was a player in Vancouver and in Buffalo and Toronto and Detroit and Anaheim, all the other places he played, and his enthusiasm that we will soon hear and see on 100% Canucks. Brad May with Landon and me after this.
I won't keep you long. Darren Millard with a tip for everyone who loves great hockey podcasts like this one. John Shannon and I host the OG of 100% Hockey, coming your way multiple times a week. The guest list is the best you will find. Multiple shows a week ensures you won't miss out on any news, and we dig even deeper into the biggest stories around the NHL. Most of our guests are also friends, so I promise there'll be more conversation beyond the X's and the O's. John really does get bored with that after a while. So join us for 100% Hockey. The name says it all. Subscribe now while you enjoy thinking about it. And enjoy.
Welcome back to 100% Canucks, joined now by number 10. You did wear number 10 in Vancouver, didn't you, Brad?
I did, yes.
Brad, yes. May. Mayday. How are you?
You know what? I'm doing amazing. I just, great weather here in Ontario. I love golf, so I'm able to continue that. And you know what? September is always like the turn of the year for me and probably every other hockey player. And then as a dad, my kids, you know, would go to school early September. So my year starts in September and ends in August. And I'm excited for another one. Can't wait to watch some hockey, but football season's rolling, golf season, Ryder Cup's coming. I get to finish my season playing golf. It's a good place to be.
Okay, now true confession here. You played in Grand Rapids with Landon Ferraro.
Who?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
what do you remember of the young rookie?
Well, I can tell you this. So I know his dad, and his dad and I played in the World Championships. The only time I played with Ray was in Vienna, Austria. And anyways, with Landon, when he came to Grand Rapids, it was at the end of my career. I'd been put on waivers with the Red Wings. And so my career was ending and this young man's career was beginning. And I couldn't have been more thrilled. I got to be on the ice with him and really I got to see like the joy and the aspirations of a young man chasing his dreams, which I once was, but not anymore. I'm on my way out the door. And that energy and enthusiasm that Landon, Thomas Tatar, and other players, Justin Abdelkader at the time, these young guys were so fired up and so hungry to learn and play hockey. You know, it actually instilled the love of the game back in me, if that makes any sense. I loved playing. I played a long time, but I didn't want to go to Grand Rapids my last 5 weeks of my career. But when I think back on it, John, I think it's one of my favorite times of my hockey career.
So who was easier to work with, Landon Ferraro or me?
Well, here's the thing. So I was you with Landon Ferraro. So you're like, first of all, I had brown curly hair at the time, John. Now I have hair like you. And so that speaks of wisdom and knowledge and what you can impart on the young wave coming in. Landon was hungry. He was excited. I knew his dad, and I was going to, and we didn't spend a lot of time together, but I definitely followed him, and I was really rooting him on along with other players that I got to actually experience that part of my career with. When I got into the TV game, which would be the next year, so I was with Landon in call it March and April, and I was with you in September and October, and I learned a lot from you, John, going into the media game, TV, being an analyst. I know there's a lot of nights that, you know, you took this green hockey player that had to learn, you know, the next part of the business. And I'm grateful for both of you.
Landon?
Well, so, you know, I moved to Vancouver after my dad retired in 02, and you were playing for the Canucks. And then I'm starting my career and I walk into a dressing room and you're standing there, right? Like you're a fan favorite here. And, you know, me as a 10-year-old, the way that you played was fun to watch. And all of a sudden I'm now in a dressing room with you. It's funny. I don't know if you remember this, but it was the same line you and Sean O'Donnell, who played with my dad in LA as well. When I played my first preseason game, you guys both used the same line. As soon as you saw me, you went, I need to retire. Like this is, this is it. But, you know, just to throw a compliment right back, like, you know, it was my first taste of pro hockey, and to see a guy like you that'd been through so much, and you go down there and you didn't just play it out. Like, I think you had, what was it, like 10 points in 17 games. Like you were playing. And I always remember, and this was something that I tried to carry through my career as well, was we came back to Abbotsford to play two games, and then we're flying back. Our flight gets delayed. So that was the days when guys would still carry poker chips around. So we're going to have a big poker tournament. And you're like, oh yeah, I'm in. And then you never showed up again. And we finally realized that you got stopped, you know, 100 feet down the hall, and you were talking to Vancouver fans. Like, you always had time for everyone. And for a young kid, like, that was important to see. So other than just your work ethic, just how you cared and loved the game was inspiring, but also like a big lesson for me. So, you know, thanks for doing that. But I will say, to watch you out on the ice and, you know, run around, but still, like, you had hands still. Like, you put up some points. You could make plays. Like, where did that passion come from? Like, were you always someone that wanted to do both? Or did you get, I'll say, more aggressive as you got older and into junior?
Interesting. First of all, thank you for the compliment.
You two guys, stop with the compliment. Just okay. Answer the question.
Fair enough. Hey, you know what? I loved what you had to say. I do remember meeting the fans and having that whole experience, obviously, right from the start. And I actually, I think it's one of the greatest things. It's a gift that keeps on giving. I run into people and I hear stories that I'm not supposed to remember, but I'll remember the interaction at an airport, a Denny's, wherever it is. And it's really cool being a hockey player, being able to do that. Talking about the way to play, I became a tough guy in junior because it was the only way to make the hockey team. I was a, you know, like us all, a skilled player, scored goals, got us, you know, assists, tried to win games, and was relied upon to do that. As I went, you know, I'm talking peewee bantam midget on mm-hmm. the teams I played. When I made it to junior, I became, and I was able to play, and I got 100 points one season, I think, or darn close to it. But I got hundreds of penalty minutes. I think I broke into junior and had 300 penalty minutes my first year, and I broke into the NHL as a rookie and had over 300 penalty minutes. And I think I fell in love with that side of the game. John and I would differ on this, and only this. I'm a pugilist 100%. I love fighting. It's the only thing I miss about not playing hockey is I can't fight anymore. There's nothing better than teeing off.
Hold on. So if I gave you a chance to score a goal, Or fight Bob Probert all day long. You'd fight before scoring a goal?
Well, you know what? Here's the thing, John. If you fight, then everybody's scared of you, and you probably have a chance to score a goal. No, hey, listen, I'm not an idiot. Scoring goals is the objective of the game. And, of course, you know, doing that and being a hockey player. But because I can't do it anymore. I do miss it. If I was a guy that could step in and score 50 goals, like, you know, all the superstars, then you know what? I wouldn't have fought as much. And you're darn right, John, scoring goals and winning games is certainly better. And certainly you could sleep better with less pain, but I don't know. I ingratiated myself with my teammates and even guys that I didn't know. The guys I fought, John, are some of my favorite people I met in hockey.
I got their
best and, but I still give you a hug and I'm a people person. And the last thing I'd say, and because I don't want to come across like a complete moron, it's a sport. It was within our sport and that's what we did. Being violent, doing something stupid elsewhere. No, it's unacceptable. Be a good person first, but to be a good team, you have to have all the ingredients. A shitty bowl of soup is either too salty, it's got too much or not enough of one thing or the other. That's where the chemistry comes into building a hockey team. And you need all types of personalities and skill sets. And you know what? It's not a perfect formula. And that's why teams look different. But you have to have a couple guys that are willing to do whatever the other guys aren't willing to do to have a chance to win. That's a guarantee.
The name of this podcast is 100% Canucks for a reason. Yes. You're here because you played three seasons with this hockey club. What do you remember about February 5th, 1998?
February 5th, is that the day I got traded from the Buffalo Sabres?
Yeah, okay, for Jeff Sanderson.
Yes, for Jeff Sanderson. So, first of all, traded for a 40 goal scorer, Landon. Not too bad. Some guys get some guys get traded for a dozen sticks. But no, I got traded to Vancouver.
A dozen sticks cost a lot nowadays. That's actually pretty good.
What I do remember about it, I was heartbroken from being traded from Buffalo. I thought I was going to be in Buffalo my whole life. I had bought a house. My wife had a baby, or we had a baby. Our son was at home sick that night. And I thought I was going to be in Buffalo forever. And I get traded around 11:30, closer to midnight, about an hour and a half after our hockey game. We played the Boston Bruins. I was the first start of the game, and we tied 2-2. That was what I remember about the night. But then I got on a phone call after being traded to the Vancouver Canucks, and Mike Keenan was on the phone. And Mike said to me, and he was in a rush because he was working on other because it's 9 o'clock out there, you know, close to nine. And he's trying to do other things. He's like, Mayday, I just want you to think of two names when you go to sleep tonight. Mark Messier and Pavel Bure. They'll be your line mates the rest of the year. Stop in my office tomorrow and come see me. And he hangs up the phone. And I went from literally having tears in my eyes with my heart broken, just looking at my dad saying, Dad, did you just hear that? I'm going to play with Messier and Bure. Let's get out of here. Let's go. Let's go chase this thing. And that's exactly how it happened. And I was so excited to get to Vancouver. And again, the first trade's always hard, but I love Vancouver. I'm a Vancouver. If I wasn't born and raised with family in Ontario, I'd be living in BC without a doubt. Like first thing, and I wouldn't leave. I miss it there. I'm coming in a couple weeks and I can't wait.
Well, I was going to ask you, you actually thought you knew a lot about Vancouver and the Amazing Race, and you screwed it up. You didn't know enough.
Well, I screwed up because I couldn't dance the Ukrainian jig.
I was about to ask, have you worked on it since, or is that you put that right behind you?
I always thought that I could do it, like the Russian Kostikov when I'm drinking. And no, Brad doesn't dance anymore because I was heartbroken on that one. I let my daughter down.
Well, speaking of that, though, is your daughter going to put snowshoes behind her after this past season?
Yeah, she's not too pleased. You know, yeah, it was a tough one. You know, this show, The Amazing Race, it gave us an incredible month. I'll never have a month like I did with my daughter and spend as much time, just the two of us with no other distractions. Incredibly special. I watched her go back. She was so lucky to be invited back on the show, along with her boyfriend, Brendan. Both great people, but that show, it taxes you and it puts you in some stressful situations. They both did well. I think here's the, you make a decision, you got to live with it. It could go either way. If I did the football challenge, Sam would have done the Ukrainian dance. We might've gone further and got through it. You know, you make decisions, you got to stick with it. They had a wonderful experience. It just was too short.
Well, here's the deal. I mean, you screwed it up for her. We all know that.
No, I know, John. I also told you I felt bad. I feel bad about it.
You know, the other thing, Landon, I will tell you is that I've traveled with Brad a few places, and he doesn't get identified anymore as a hockey player. Sure, he also, he gets identified as
from judges in Prince Edward Island, Charlottetown, right?
Yeah, he gets judged now as a star of the Amazing Race Canada. I mean,
not just judged. Judges.
No, I know. This guy was an Ontario Supreme Court justice, and he sat there, and all he wanted to talk to was Brad May, not about his Stanley Cup ring, not about the famous Buffalo Sabre May Day goal. He wanted to talk about the Amazing Race.
Yeah, and I got to be honest, hey, John, it's still, I run into people. I was at this golf tournament, and there are people that they're like, hey, you know, just food for thought, like my wife and I, or my daughters and I, my family and I, we actually get together, watch this show, The Amazing Race, and we really like watching you and Sam. And I get that a lot. And I think maybe the coolest part, again, I don't know, above and beyond hockey and all these other wonderful moments, maybe it's a good, I say, illustration of father, daughter, family bond, the way you can treat and talk to one another, respect each other. I've had couples and families say thank you. You know, it brought them together. I don't know. You certainly don't do it for that reason. But if you're doing things genuinely and you enjoy them and you're happy and you're willing to share those experiences, I think it does help people. And I'm just lucky I get those chances. I've been fortunate enough to be in front of the camera and be able to tell my story or give my opinion on hockey games or the way they're played. I get to sit here and tell everybody, the world, whoever's watching this podcast, that Vancouver is the greatest city in North America, bar none, hands down. It's the prettiest place. And yeah, it's got its issues, but I'll tell you what, anybody could fly into Vancouver, and I would challenge any, if it is a nice day, there's no place prettier. And the people of Vancouver are wonderful.
What do you remember, other than playing with Pavel and Mark, what do you remember about your time in Vancouver?
I remember my teammates. I remember them. Now I get away from hockey, I remember the mount. I remember going before games, standing at the Lynn Valley Suspension Bridge, drinking a Starbucks coffee, and sit there. I would stand there for 30 minutes, and I would try to get myself into that headspace to go, you know, play, fight, score, shoot, hit, whatever it is for that night. That's a place, like, it's one of the most magical places for me. I love Lynn Valley. I lived up on, you know, off Dollarton Highway towards Deep Cove, amazing place to live. I remember Mike Keenan. I remember Brian Burke. By the way, they don't like each other. I think Burkey fired Keenan, but the two of them equally loved Brad and gave me an opportunity to really pursue my dreams and continue. And Brian Burke, beyond that, I ended up playing for Burkey twice in Vancouver. Won a Stanley Cup with Brian in Anaheim, and then ended up in Toronto with Brian. He's my favorite guy in hockey, my biggest ally for sure, who brought me around, and I was able to sign multiple contracts with Brian. So I think of them. And then I think of my buddies Crimshan, Danny, and Marcello Leone when we raised $1 million for a Canuck place in the lockout in 2004. And I wouldn't have been able to be a part of that with my name on this event if it wasn't for the generosity of the Lower Mainland, but my two buddies and Richard Hoy, these three guys, we'd have late night meetings for months, the couple months that helped us do that. By the way, raising money for Canuck Place, which we all think is near and dear to our heart. And these families need private funding. So when I think of Vancouver, it's so much more than just being a Canuck. Although I'm a hockey player, and that's all I was a hockey player. There's just so much more to kind of bundle up. But I love my time in Vancouver. And like I said, I actually am coming twice in the next month, but I'm coming in 2 weeks to spend some time with a family that took us under their wing. And we lost Bill McConnell. So I'm coming out and doing a eulogy at his memorial. And that's, you know, those relationships that bring you back. And forgive me for being personal, but to be honest with you, this is my story, and I'm so lucky to be able to share it and tell it. If people are going to listen, I'm going to talk.
Yeah, yes, we know.
You were a part of the Canucks at, like, kind of an interesting time. It was, there were the, you know, the Messier and, like, some of the older guys, but, like, you also played with a young Marcus Naslund, who becomes, you know, a legend here in Vancouver, a young Matthias Olsson. Like, what did you see out of them kind of learning the game, learning the league in their first couple of years? like, could you see what they were going to become, really? Or was that something you were a bit more surprised about?
I think the one, now we're talking about these guys. So, of course, the Pavel Bure was on that team. And this was in that transition. A lot of the old Canucks that were being traded out of Vancouver. But, yeah, you're talking about Marcus. Marcus, I got there. I ended up being put on Messier and Bure's line. Now, think about this. I'm the left winger on the first line of Vancouver with two Hall of Famers. And Marcus Naslund's on the third line. Kind of doesn't make sense. But on the timing of your careers and maybe even the growth of that, Todd Bertuzzi was on the second line, left winger. So Brad Mays ahead of those two guys, like, give your head a shake, right? These guys are, like, incredible what they did. Well, they ended up playing together and became part of that wonderful line, the West Coast connection with Brendan Morrison. You looked at Matthias Olland. This guy was a man at 18, 19 years old when I got there. Dave Scatcherd was a big guy as well, young guy. Steve Staios goes on to play over 1,000 games, and he was just a bit part at that time when I got to Vancouver. He ends up becoming a captain and goes to the Stanley Cup, game 7. Unfortunately, they lost. Now he's the GM. Like, there's so many guys that had it in them. They just weren't given the opportunity to be that, or it was just that part of their career, you know, as your career takes off and takes flight a little bit, sometimes you're in the wrong situation and you miss those opportunities. I think a lot of these players found their groove. And, you know, when I got back to Vancouver the second time, we had two young guys that literally Vancouver would holler at, like, they wanted to get rid of. Do you know the two guys they wanted to get rid of?
Well, you're talking about Daniel and Henrik.
And Henrik, and they would blame, we lost to St. Louis, lost to Minnesota in the second round when I got traded back, and the warpath was out to get rid of these two Swedes that were soft. That couldn't be further from the truth. These guys were such good hockey players. Yeah, maybe they didn't demonstrate their toughness by fighting like an idiot like myself, but they were so physically fit and so into, like. And by the way, Vancouver was lucky to keep them. Sometimes those decisions that aren't made are the best things that ever happened for an organization. Vancouver, we had a lot of good ones, good young ones. And thanks for the question, Landon, because I love talking about my buddies. We had Ed Jovanovski, Brent Sopel. We had Merrick Malik. We had an older Adrian Acone. Brian McCabe was on our team. All these players made a significant impact on their future teams. And the guys that stayed in Vancouver, they made a difference.
Who made the biggest impact on your career?
It's so hard to say just one, but I'm going to say, because I'm a young guy in Buffalo, I have two players, and it doesn't just end there, but Pat LaFontaine and Dale Hawerchuk, they both took me. I was kind of like their younger brother. They helped me. They helped me make life decisions, certainly around the game, because I was their left winger. Again, imagine us.
How does this happen? You know, LaFontaine and Hawerchuk.
Hey, listen to this. Messier, Bure. Yeah, like, at some point in time, Brad was like, this guy was coveted, John. But
you talk so well, you just don't give him a choice. No,
I'm already.
I'm trying to find the 20 goal season in the stats.
And here's the kicker: I should have had 30 goal seasons, John. I was that good. But I never did it, so I can't claim it. But I could have if I wasn't such a meatball and actually focused. But I wouldn't have played 19 years either if I didn't have that other ingredient. I do think I fought too much and I was distracted. But then again, maybe my team at the time, you know, I thought that it needed that. And by the way, you're only one piece of something. We're all that good if we're put in those situations. But at the end of the day, over the course of a career, you know what? There's a lot of guys that came and went well before you that you know, were so much better than what you could have been. And you know what? You just fill the role for the team, for the moment, for the time. And I couldn't be more proud. I do think I could have been a 30 goal scorer when my high was only 18, John. Am I out of my mind or not?
Well, listen, Brad, I think you could have done anything you wanted, so it's okay by me. I got to ask you, we're smack in the middle of the preseason. What do you remember about training camp? What do you remember about preseason hockey in your time in the NHL?
Yeah, so back when I first started, there was a lot of fights. There was a lot of craziness. It was like a half a season packed into 3 weeks just to get to the first game of the season. Of course, I think our game's gotten smarter. sorry about my hand there, gotten smarter. There's going to be less games. That's less wear and tear on the players that we pay money to go watch. The nerves that come into play when you're there, I don't care if you're a 10 or 12 year player, maybe a guy on a 6 or 7 year contract, you know, doesn't feel those feelings, but you know what? There's always somebody trying to take your job and you're trying to hang on to it as long as you can. And the nerves are different for an 18-year-old Landon Ferraro than a 38-year-old Brad May. But I'll tell you what, we're pitted against each other. He wants my job and I'm going to lose it to him if I'm not sharp. And if I don't, you know, outplay this young guy who, by the way, he's in better shape. He's younger. He's less, you know, hasn't had the injuries. All that stuff less inhibited. The game is crazy because you're playing older players against young guys, and with the salary cap, the oldest players, they end up having to take way less money than probably what they're worth, because it's actually the only way these teams can manage their salary cap to pay their big players and then get the infusion of youth, because teams have to develop from within, and they don't want to hang on to a 37, 38-year-old Brad May, who's asking for a little bit more money. This guy's out. Landon Ferraro or that player, he's coming in and he's going to get the opportunity. And I think that's a wonderful thing. I mean, by the way, you know, we're going into fall. Things die. Spring comes. Things bloom. It's the way the world is, and it too shall pass.
Holy smokes. That's quite philosophical, Brad. That was very good. By the way, you do realize this is the last year of testing at camp. So yeah. Next year you wouldn't have to worry about it.
Well, but the testing, the amazing part about testing, we all have to be in great shape. Like if you're not in good shape, bottom line is just the eye test. You can do a drill drills for 45 minutes on a practice and you can figure out who's ready to go and who's not, and who's in shape and who's not. So the testing is somewhat overblown all the time. When you start getting guys that were more focused on doing bench presses than actually stick handling, which is the game that we play, right? Doing VO2 tests, riding a bicycle, than actually getting your skates on and doing mountains and skating and being a hockey player. So yes, the body is built in the gym and when you train, but you still have to be a hockey player. I don't care. You give me the best looking guy, 6'5", I'll beat the tar out of him and I'll outskate him and I'll score him. And I'll, you know, like really at the end of the day, if he doesn't have the talent as a hockey player, I think hockey's figured that out. So the testing thing doesn't get me. But the one thing that I don't like, and by the way, it's not my game, Landon. Maybe you can weigh in. Maybe you see it differently. No dress code. I here's the deal. I think I love the fact that maybe I don't like the fact that we had to wear suits and ties and everywhere. But you know what? Being militaristic, having this, I think there's going to be more distractions when some jackass comes in with a fedora. Somebody's going to be wearing a jean jacket. Somebody's going to be wearing like shorts with whatever, high top shoes, whatever. Some of these guys are going to actually ruin this. And it's a distraction on its face. And you know what? One thing I like about private school, they all wear the same uniform and there's no discussion on what you're wearing to school. Therefore, you get there on your merits, not all those other things that you think about that are actually distractions that would ruin teams and put wedges within those groups. I think it's a problem. I wish it was back to a dress code.
I will say this. I think it was a few episodes ago I was saying to John, just being on the panel, I'm like, I keep asking the question, do I got to put this tie on? Or, you know, like I'm trying to work it a little bit. You know, I kind of like it. But at the same time, I see what you're saying, but I've always had the thought of, you get your nice suit, you put it on, and then it's like the 7 rink people see you walking in.
Yeah, but you know, I'm with you.
Yeah, but back to training camp, like the way I had it described to me about fitness testing is you can't make the team through fitness testing, but you can definitely play or put yourself off the team. Like you just need to be in shape, and that's what guys are now, right? Like it's rare that you hear a guy comes to camp not ready to go. Like it's their job. They take it serious. But, you know, I am curious. You mentioned it a little bit ago of, you know, you're 38, I'm 18. I'm trying to take your job. Like, how was it for you when you were a young guy? Like you want to show respect to the older guys, but you got like, essentially you got to take their job. Like, how do you go about that? Where Like if you were talking to a young guy on the Canucks that's trying to make the jump from the American League to the NHL this year, like how do you toe that line or do you even see a line?
Okay, so I love this question. I'm so happy you asked me. I hope I don't upset anyone, but I don't care. I really don't. I hope I don't, but I really don't care. Any player that, and by the way, if it happens, it's just that they haven't been schooled properly with the right focus and the right energy and the right mandate that they set forth for themselves. Any player that goes to an NHL training camp and says, I'm going there, I'm getting some experience to go back to junior, to go back to, it's not college, but to go back to, or to the American Hockey League. Just, it was great. I got to play with Brad May and Landon Ferraro and, you know, Marcus Nathan. That was great. I'm going to take that experience. You know, you can shove that up your rear end. I think you have to go at 18 and challenge the best. If you want to be the best, you got to beat the best. And by the way, if you're up there and you're playing for 10 years, every old player doesn't want to be run over at training camp, doesn't want to be outscored, doesn't want to be, you know, competition-wise in the gym. Because all these old guys, Landon, you know it, because it happened to me and I'm sure it happened to you. Hey, buddy, slow down on the bike. Slow down at practice. When you have a practice on, you know, after a loss and you're actually at the front of the line, guys are telling you to slow down, right? But you're actually trying to compete for ice time to the coach that's actually evaluating you daily. And if you slow down because I put pressure on you as a veteran, then I'm a shitty veteran, number one. So bad teams have shitty veterans. No doubt about it. Those are losing habits. Bad teams develop shitty rookies. And that's why shitty rookies become shitty veterans. And the good teams actually have their culture in line and in check that, you know what, it's a meritocracy and you have to earn your place and you have to go and beat the best. So I would encourage, and I think I'd be welcomed in every locker room to encourage every young player to not worry about Brad May, who's played 15 years, won a Stanley Cup and thinks he's a big wheel. You go and you beat Brad and you go and you outplay Brad and you do whatever it takes. And you know what? If you take a beating from him, get back up and go after him again and have that attitude. Anybody that says I'll try, you can shove try up your rear end because you either do or you don't. I don't like the word try. I don't use the word try. And anybody that says, hey, oh, I'm sorry, but I tried. You know, I shove that up. Yeah, that's a losing. That just sets you up. By the way, I'm not saying that everybody's a loser that says that, but that sets you up to make excuses. And when you're in a when you have to produce and you're in this industry, trying's that's a failed word. You're looking at it the wrong way. You either do or you don't.
What are you doing now, Brad?
Lots of fun things. I, you know, I do some charity work. I bounce around. I do some hockey stuff. I run my own charity along with a group of you know, hockey players, ex-players. I'm an insurance broker, John. Now I was in TV with you. I'm going to get back into it, I believe, at some point here. I've been asked to. But all things being said, I'm an insurance broker as a profession. Anybody that's out there, I can take care of your stuff because guess what? I fought for my teammates. And the question is, why wouldn't I fight for you? that's my sales pitch. But at the end of the day, no, it's about people. And my kids are amazing, 29 and 26, married to the same wife for 31 years. Never been with, you know, since high school, grade 10, I've been with Bridge. Life's great. We're building a house. And yeah, I found peace. I've always been the guy that had FOMO, that wanted to be everywhere and do other things and maybe didn't enjoy or I didn't take it for granted, but I'm content. I think being content's a good thing. I'm still restless, but I'm content.
Well, you're a good friend, Brad May.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that. And I like you too. And I actually owe a lot of my successes after my playing career to you, John.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not so sure about that. Anyway, thanks for this. Len and I'll be back after this on 100% Canucks. So we got full bore Brad May there, Landon. We got it all, which is actually, I thought he was pretty darn good. I was impressed. Usually Brad's all over the map, but he stayed pretty focused. You must have had a huge effect on him in Grand Rapids.
Well, I put him in his place a couple times, right?
I will tell you one quick story that I think I've told on other shows. I was vice president of broadcasting in the National Hockey League in 2007 in Anaheim when the Ducks won the Stanley Cup. And the Anaheim dressing room was so small and the area behind the bench was so small, we had to do all of the interviews and all of the celebration, not in the dressing room for the Ducks. We had to do it on the ice in front of everybody. And by the way, that has become the norm now because it started in Anaheim because of necessity. So I'm walking across the ice at some point, maybe 25 minutes after the game. The cup's been given out. Players are being interviewed. The champagne's already come out on the ice. The families are there. And I'm walking across the ice. And this giant of a man on skates comes from behind and starts to hug me and lifts me up off the ground. And he says, John, we're going to work together soon. And I turn around and it's Brad. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, I'm going to become a broadcaster. Well, next year? He says, no, but soon. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it. So, and Brad's one of those guys that he never stops trying to do stuff. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised in the near future. We see that Brad's back in broadcasting, having a career again. And I quite loved his plug for his insurance brokerage company. I thought that was very good too. So he's a fascinating guy. He's a fun guy to be around.
You won't miss an opportunity. That's for sure. He's such a good talker. And again, like he's so fun to be around. I would have loved, you know, cause again, I saw him in his last games of his career when he was down in Grand Rapids and like, he didn't want to go down. Even when he got sent down, like, he had to think about it for a half a second. Like, am I really going to go do this? And he went down and brought the same great attitude he always does and made sure to really maximize the last month of his career and really, really enjoy it. And he played good hockey as well. But I would love to see him, what he was like at 18. Because, like, I can't imagine it being much more than it was at 38. Like, you can't have more energy than that, can you?
All you have to do is watch the overtime goal against the Devils. Devils or Bruins?
Bruins.
Bruins. Against the Bruins. And Rick Jenneret's great call of Mayday, Mayday, Mayday in Buffalo.
Sorry to cut you off, but the craziest part with that is, do you know who he made that deke against?
Ray Bourque?
It was Ray Bourque. Yeah. Like, it wasn't like it was the sixth defenseman. It was one of the best skating defensemen in the game. And he makes that little dipsy doodle and another great hold and patience to get around Andy Moog. And before you know it, Mayday's living in infamy. Like, it's one of the best calls ever.
Well, he will. Well, it is. And one of the best goals ever. And he will forever be known in Buffalo as a Sabre, even though people in Vancouver, quite frankly, fell in love with Brad Bay in the seasons that he played for the Canucks. Thanks for this, Landon. We'll talk to you later in the week.
All right, sounds good. Have a good one.
Brad May on 100% Canucks. Thanks for listening or watching the program, and we'll talk to you later in the week.